from NPR Music. You're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. It's time to make some noise. There's something so cleansing about loud music, something so perfect about a drone. And while this is a palate-cleansing music for me, it's a steady diet of Lars Gotrich, an online producer here at NPR Music, an infrequent regular guest, right?
I know. This is only my second appearance on the show, Bob.
It's nothing personal.
I know.
Yeah. And you're on the blog regularly. Every Fridays, Lars has a nice blog post about some new metal band, some noise, some drone band, something... Something out of the ordinary, and always interesting.
And it's been dubbed Viking's Choice.
Yes, and you are a resident Viking here today to play us a good chunk of metal, a bunch of drones, outer sound music, you often refer to it as.
Yeah, I don't know why I decided on that nomenclature. Experimental feels too limiting, and avant-garde, that's an old term. And
that's a turnoff word.
I just like outer sound. It just means that it goes out.
Yep. I'm with you. And so what is this? What are we listening to in the background here?
This is the Psychic Paramount. To limit it, it would be calling it a psychedelic rock band. Mm-hmm. But imagine if, yes, Mahavishnu Orchestra, Tony Williams, and Can, and Comets on Fire all got into a room and just jammed.
Ooh.
And that's about where you're getting with this.
Let's hear just a tiny bit more with that in mind. I didn't expect it to do that, and I like this.
The great thing about this band is while all three musicians are just stellar, the drumming on this record just takes it where it needs to go. It's like if John Bonham was a jazz drummer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just this guy's definitely driving the bus here.
Like, loud and powerful, but swinging.
Huh. Awesome. What song is this?
The name of the song is N5. All the songs on this album, which is just called the Roman numeral 2, just have nonsense letters as their song titles, no particular meaning.
Another nice turn coming up right here.
Here we go.
This music hits about all of your sweet spots and a whole lot of mine, especially in the what's happening right here for me. Right?
Oh, what's that? What are you hearing here?
That percussive piano and that nice long drone that just sits under it. I'm such a sucker for that stuff.
I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm there.
Right.
Yeah.
You got some other drone stuff you want to do? You have a wide variety of stuff.
But you want to take a quick left turn?
Sure.
Out of nowhere?
Totally.
Let's listen.
The last
to
time we did a show, we did a lot of left turns.
We'll get to the metal stuff.
Okay.
We'll get there, I promise.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to let you listen to something by a Boston-based field recording musician as well as improviser. His name's Ernst Carell. And why don't you just pull it up? I feel all like right. You need to hear it.
Okay. It sounds like sails hitting a mast. I'm not sure what's going on
here. That might be something along the lines of what it is. So what this is in 2008,
birds?
Ernst Carell went to Switzerland, and he was fascinated by the sounds of the Swiss transportation system. So gondolas, and what we're listening to actually right now is called a transverse seat chairlift. And I don't know if you know what that is, but it's one of those...
I think of skiing when I hear the word chairlift.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It goes up the side of a mountain, okay. But there are chairs that are kind of stacked. It's like a moving staircase. And so what you're hearing is them just whizzing by these different parts.
And is he treating them at all, or is it just a direct field recording?
It's completely untreated, and there are 10 tracks on this album. And, you know, it's hard to qualify what makes a good field recording and what doesn't. I think it really depends on what sounds appeal to you.
Yeah. All right. 20 more seconds of this, and then pick me something hard.
Okay.
Okay, so that's Ernst Karel, K-A-R-E-L, the Swiss Mountain Transportation Systems. That was unexpected and good, which is generally the case when we do these shows.
It's a steady listening album. It's a headphone record. It's not something you just put on your CD player and leave.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
We should rock out, Bob.
Do it.
So this next thing that we're going to hear from is a band called Hammers of Misfortune. This was actually one of my most anticipated albums of the year.
I laugh because I love these names. I don't laugh because I'm making fun of them. I generally just love the names.
Metal has the best band names. Yeah. I think we can all agree on that.
I'm there.
All right. So Hammers of Misfortune are from San Francisco. You may know its guitarist John Cobbett, formerly of Ludacris.
Also San Francisco.
They were on my year-end list last year with their incredible album, The Tenant. But they broke up earlier this year just because they didn't feel like they had anywhere else to go, which I think that's a great reason mm-hmm. to break up. And Ludacris, John Cobbett was more the guitarist. And Hammers of Misfortune, this is his baby. These are his songs. And I mean, like, these are songs. He actually takes a lot from the San Francisco psychedelic 60s and from Queen and from Bowie more than he does from a lot of modern metal records, but it is definitely still very metal. This is actually my song of the year. This is called The Grain.
Look at the whole song online. Hammers of Misfortune, The Grain is a song. And I hear this song, and we've done a lot of shows together. You've never played anything like this. Where does this come from? And I'm surprised. I have to say, and I was surprised when his vocals came in so early in the song. That's so pop.
I mean, as I said before, John Cobbett writes songs, and he has a great talent for finding, he doesn't sing them, he has a great talent for finding vocalists who can sing these very powerful and sometimes extremely emotional songs. And he's coming from more of a traditional 80s style metal, more than a lot of the screamier stuff that I tend to play for you on this show. And, you know, there's still part of me that I still really love just well-written songs. I mean, I think that's the core of a lot of what I actually listen to. But, I mean, just listen to this, that little breakdown right there.
That's here. Completely different songs. Nicely done.
And there are just so many twists and turns on this song that, like, just make me euphoric at every moment that he twists. I turn right with him. Twin Lee guitars, Bob. Throw up the horns.
You and me, Lars. Awesome. So that's Hammers of Misfortune. Take me somewhere else. And you're going to do a blog post and list like you do every year, right? Of some sort. This is.
So what I'm going to do, because I like to do more than I'm asked of, I'm doing two lists this year. I'm doing a list just for metal, and I'm doing a list just for outer sound. And both of them will have 25 picks. You'll be able to listen to a lot of the music. Not all of it, but a lot of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't help myself.
And that'll be on the All Songs Considered blog, npr.org/allsongs. And if people want to follow you on Twitter,
you can find me at Total Vibration.
All one word.
All one word.
Excellent. What else?
It's hard not to talk about this next artist without talking about Jack Rose. There's a modern American fingerstyle guitar owes a great debt to men like John Fahey. And then Jack Rose brought it all back. But one of the people who's actually been doing longer than Jack Rose.
And Jack Rose is an artist whose last album, posthumous album, came out last year. We put it on last year's show. Passed away, a year
December
or so
2009. Yeah. And Glenn Jones, it's not as if he's picking up the torch from where Jack Rose left off, because he was forging his whole path the entire time. But they were definitely best of friends. And they would perform together. They even appeared on a DVD together that I still can't bring myself to watch because I think I'm just going to cry during the entire time.
It's okay to cry.
It's okay. Jack Rose is a musician that actually meant a lot to me and a lot to my musical education development. Got me into John Fahey, got me into a lot of that kind of music that I never would have heard of if it weren't for him.
And on the face of it, it doesn't seem like, if I heard Glenn Jones or John Fahey, I wouldn't think necessarily of you. Because music has so much space, and a lot of the music although this drone that runs underneath a lot of this stuff, there's an awful lot of space, something that isn't in a lot of the music you like, and that's not a criticism, just a truism, I think.
Sure.
You want to play some Glenn Jones?
Yeah, this is from his album, The Wanting. This is Of Its Own Kind.
Thank you. You know, I still regret not being here for that tiny desk. I don't know where I was, but...
It was a pretty one. We still don't have it on the site, but soon. We'll have it
soon.
That's him on six-string guitar. He also plays 12-string and banjo and bottleneck blues guitar. It's got a little bit of everything.
Great. Glenn Jones, the record's called The Wanting, and that's of its own kind. Really hard to fade this out, Lars. But here it goes. All right. Take me somewhere else. Completely.
All right. So up next, we should listen to a band called Tombs. Now, in my full year-end metal list, people who pay attention to metal may notice that a lot of it is not very straight ahead. This has been a really good year for metal to cross genres. In the last couple years, I've noticed that metal bands really like The Cure, like especially Disintegration, that very atmospheric gothic record. You certainly hear there's some Path of Totality, which is the name of this Tombs record. This particular song that I want to play called Silent World, it's deep and it's dark and it's gothic and it kind of has a Gregorian chant thing going on, kind of.
Should I start it anywhere or?
No, start at the beginning.
Okay. This sounds monumental. I imagine live this is...
It's huge.
Okay.
I saw Tombs play with Worm Rot, a great grindcore band out of Singapore, and Baltimore a few months ago.
Was that Metal Fest in Baltimore?
No, this was something completely different. But just everything about the band, it felt like they were kind of like a miniature army that was about to like attack the very small audience that happened to be there that night. I was completely blank. This record hadn't come out yet. I hadn't heard it yet, but I was familiar with their debut album. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
And then when they played the new songs, I was like, oh.
This Path of Totality, is that going to make it in your top 10?
Oh, this is in the top 3.
Excellent.
Yeah. For the metal list.
That's good. I'm here. I'm talking with Lars Gotrich. Lars writes a weekly blog post on Fridays for All Songs Considered. He's a producer here at NPR Music, a former intern. I always have to say that, for All Songs Considered. And you'll be putting two lists online. You should know that you're listening to All Songs Considered from NPR Music. So we've listened to a bunch of metal, Lars Gotrich. Have you personal trends or witness any trends that you see this year?
So as I mentioned earlier, it's been a good year for crossing genres within metal. I think that's been a key to this year when it came to that. I've noticed a lot less solid black metal records, and that's kind of like one of my pet genres. That and doom metal are kind of like my favorites. But I just didn't hear as much that I fell in love with. A couple notable exceptions that you'll see on the list are from Crowlis, from Death Heaven, and from Negative Plane. Those are the three that I thought were really solid. And a young band that I think has a lot of promise called Ash Borer. They'll be putting out a new album next year. But as far as other trends, I think it's been a good year for the ladies in metal. I know that sounds weird to say the ladies in metal. I may take that back. But it's been a good year for them. Every year there's a magazine called Revolver that puts out the hottest chicks in hard rock and metal, and it always garners a lot of controversy because a lot of people just hate the idea, hate that women are being objectified just because they're female musicians in metal. And it, but the interesting thing about that article this year, it actually generated some really great conversation about what it means to be a woman playing metal music and whether that matters or not. But one band that I think that stands out in that regard is a band called Witch Mountain. The singer for Witch Mountain is Uta Plotkin. And Witch Mountain was a band that actually has been around for over a decade, but this is their second album, just because various band members had children, had other things to do, and then finally they came back and did this album called South of Salem. Completely self-released, self-funded, self-produced, all that goodness. And it's just got this huge, massive sound that owes to Jimi Hendrix and Black Sabbath. And Uta just has this deeply soulful voice that gets right into the song.
What do you want to hear?
Wing of the Lord.
Great.
So speaking of trends in metal, it's actually been a good year for Portland, now that I think about it.
How so?
And this band is from Witch Mountain is from Portland, and there's just been a lot of good earthy, mostly doom and stoner metal kind of bass bands coming out of that little town. So Witch Mountain is one of them, Yob is another, and well, not exact, they're Eugene, Oregon, but close enough. Nether Regions, another good band. Wizard Rifle kind of sounds like if Lightning Bolt was actually a metal band. It's been a good year for Portland.
Excellent. Do you want to play something that gets us a little away from metal, heads us toward the drone land?
Yeah.
All right.
So the terrible and awesome thing about doing year-end lists is discovering albums that you didn't hear until you start doing lists, until you start thinking about the year.
It's a good reason to do lists, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so 2 weeks ago, here comes Julia Holter upsetting my apple cart with this album that I just have not been able to escape. It's called Tragedy. I can't classify it. And
we just listen a little? And
that's the other thing. You can't just drop in.
I see.
But what we should do, we should just start it from the beginning and maybe fast forward a little bit. And yeah.
Yeah. This is from, this is called Celebration?
Yeah.
I'm just curious what happens when I go in. Let's say I'm at 30 seconds. Let's go to a minute 30.
Oh. Well, it kind of hovers there.
Right.
Get about halfway through.
All right. Oh.
Some vocals do come in eventually on this track.
Is she the singer?
She is the singer.
And all the instruments?
She does a lot of the instruments, not all of them. Okay. The string stuff that appears elsewhere on the album comes from some school in California.
She cut that off. I didn't do that. This music has a monstrous pause in it that would make any radio person have a heart attack. Okay, so I'm going to talk here. But this music's very cinematic.
Yeah, it's kind of, it is cinematic. And, you know, it's interesting you say that because it's actually based on a Greek tragedy, Euripides' Hippolytus. You know, this I know the part that we just heard was very ambient and dreamy. It sounded like a crackling record of some kind. This record kind of goes in a lot of different places, and like I said, you just can't drop a needle in and expect to get something tangible.
Let me find a little vocal part, and then we'll move on to something even more ambient.
There we go.
And then we're going to rock out. It's Julia Holter, H-O-L-T-E-R.
That's Holter. Correct.
And the record's called Tragedy. Almost, your list is going to be huge. Is it 10 of each or 25 of each or 50 of each?
So I did two 25-item lists. 10 of, and on both of them, there will be 10 with songs that you can listen to.
Awesome. Lars cuts. Lars does the analog approach to list making, which is he prints everything on a sheet of paper or two, and then takes scissors and cuts just each song. So each song is one little thin
album.
Each album is one thin strip of paper that he then, as I sit across from him, moves during the course of the week. Like he'll move something up to the top or out of the bottom or maybe to the side. Can I just say that when you left your desk with
you
this list.
You guys screwed it up. Well, I went away for Thanksgiving and everything. I knew you guys were going to screw it up.
Yeah.
So I took a picture.
We were so glad. We were so worried when the person I won't name knocked your list. All the papers started going screwy, and we thought, oh, what's going to happen when he comes back? Sorry, Lars.
Because I knew you were going to screw it up.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bob.
No. Well, it wasn't hard, but that person will go unnamed.
Okay. We'll let him go for now.
So take us to somewhere on another planet.
Earlier I mentioned Portland and Oregon having a good year for metal. So my number two metal album of the year is from a band called Yob. They've been around for a very long time. It's the brainchild of
Y-O-B.
Y-O-B,
like
Yob.
Your own booze.
Sure. I don't know if that's... I don't think that's what it stands for, but yeah, why not? But they've been around for a long time. They're based around... It's the brainchild of a guitarist, Mike Scheidt. They're kind of like metallic mantras. They're very slow-building songs, usually over like 10, 12 minutes long. And, you know, if you repeat something long enough, it becomes a mantra. And it just so happens that these are very heavy, doomy mantras.
I'm sneaking.
Yeah. Although I think the song I picked starts out good.
And this is called Prepare the Ground.
Prepare the Ground from Atma. So that was Yob from the record Atma.
Prepare the Ground's a song.
Prepare the Ground. Awaken, Bob. Awaken. That's the lyric.
And they took about 2 minutes to prepare that ground, too.
They right prepare the it, Bob.
I like it. I like it a lot. I like what's happening to these songs. And songs more so this year than last, I think.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll have to go back to the old show, but that's my memory. We need one good, really gorgeous drone piece.
Oh, I know it. So I'm going to screw this name up, even though I've even asked him over GChat how to say it. But you should play some Nicholas Schizpanic.
Okay, now his name alone, S-Z-C-Z-E-P-A-N-I-K. Got that, children?
Yeah.
Repeat that back.
So full disclosure, Nicholas contributed a track to a Christmas compilation that I put out a few years ago on my own record label.
You got rich off of it, and that's why you're going to talk about him again.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Thanks.
But the name of this album is called Please Stop Loving Me, which is a very direct album title if I've ever heard one.
It's also the name of the song, which is
47 minutes long.
Which is the album.
Which is the album. I've always really adored Nicholas's music. He has a relationship with drone and ambient music, and he prefers the term sound art, which I think works a little bit better. But he has a relationship with sound that is incredibly personal. Everything that I've heard from him feels like the emotional crux of a really good movie, but complex one. In fact, the first time I really listened to this album was coming out of the movie theater after seeing The Tree of Life, which is the Terrence Malick movie, which is not in any way, shape, or form a straightforward film. It's this abstract tone.
Could have used some of this music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, that movie is just this giant abstract tone poem, and you can kind of think of this album as the same way. And it's more about color, the hues of colors instead of blocks of color, because the way the tones shift are so slight. And sometimes when you expect it to go one way, even after a long passage, it sometimes will take a darker route. But always one that seems slightly hopeful.
Let's listen to some in the clear.
So that unfolds for 47 minutes.
Awesome. Slowly fade this down. And then you're going to play this, your favorite loud metal piece.
Right. Well, that was my favorite Outer Sound album of the year.
So we get both sides of you in the last bit of this show.
Why are you whispering?
Oh, well, I don't know.
We're about to rock.
Oh, right. Trying to set up the contrast.
So my number one metal album of the year, I let the cat out of the bag actually a few days ago about my number one metal album of the year, because it's actually our first listen this week. It's from the band Cormorant.
Right at the end of the year, you get your favorite record.
I know. Well, the thing is, I've actually had this album for about 2.5 months.
Okay.
It's you know, the perks of being a music journalist, I guess. But yes, that is a dangerous thing, to suddenly hoist upon the world, this is the number one album of the year. Oh, it just came out 2 days ago. But the name of the album is Dwellings. It's by this band called Cormorant out of California.
Why is it your favorite record?
Why is it my favorite record?
What did it?
I have an issue in metal with really technically minded bands that just like to shred. And because sometimes I feel like I'm missing out on passion. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of that comes from growing up with hardcore in the late 90s, because it was more about the passion behind the song than it was at how well you could play your guitar. What's great about this album is that the musicians on this record are incredible at what they do. Their song length averages around 8-9 minutes. There are lots of twists and turns and interesting. But the thing about Dwellings by Cormorant is that it never loses sight of the song. It never loses sight of the story behind the song. Because this album is very much about a collection of stories about men and women trying to achieve immortality. Hmm. There are songs about Philip Pettit, the tightrope rocker that you may remember from that documentary Man on a Wire. There's a song about the Spanish conquistador made most famous in Werner Herzog's Aguirre. What's the name of that?
I think it's Aguirre, Wrath of God.
Wrath of God, that's right. The basis here is death and black metal, but it takes in sounds from folk and classical music. And so there are moments when the album actually gets to breathe with some clean singing and clean guitar strum instead of just wheedly, wheedly, wheedly the entire time. So I love how this album starts. So I think that's how we should end.
So is this the opening cut, The First Man?
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you, Lars. Always, you always open my ears to something new. I hope that's true for you out there. Lars Gotrich's list of favorite 400 songs now. It's top. His 25 best metal and 25 outer sound lists will go online during the week. And, you know, tell us what you think about it. And a couple of things you should know, that we'll have our listener poll going up shortly. We would like you to vote on that for your favorite records, so you tell us what you love of all sorts of music. And we'll have our year-end wrap-up, the All Songs year-end wrap-up. I'll have my top 10 list of albums going up soon. All of this starts to unfold. All of this is not to say necessarily what the best music is, but the music we're passionate about and we feel like we should pass on to you. And you do the same to us. You tell us what you're passionate about. This isn't a war. This is about turning people on. Lots of great...
No, Bob, this is a war.
Oh, damn.
List-making is war, I declare.
I'm Bob Boylan, along with Lars Gotrich for NPR Music. Here's Cormorant, and it's All Songs Considered.